we had a meeting between Donald Trump and Zelensky, which
epic.
Had epic. No conclusion, no outcome, but some sort of chaos. Here is what J.D. Vance said in his interview with Fox News.
You know, when you would talk to the Biden administration officials in private, it's another example of a terrible situation the Biden admin left the Trump administration. When you ask them, what's the plan? Okay, we're going to spend tens of billions of dollars, hundreds of billions of dollars in Ukraine. What is your plan? And they would honestly tell you, well, we're just going to send them weapons for as long as we can and hope eventually they can turn the tide. Hope is not a strategy. Throwing money and ammunition at a terrible conflict, that is not a strategy. The only guy in town with a strategy is the President of the United States, and everybody needs to follow his lead.
Yeah. Your take, Pep.
Well, Vance is very well articulated. What he said is essentially correct, even by omitting the most important part, which this is a proxy war initiated by the U.S. against Russia. He cannot say that, obviously. So they are just in a containment mode now. They want this thing to end as soon as possible because they have other foreign policy priorities. And sinking unimaginable amounts of funds and weapons in Ukraine, any businessman can see that this is not only bad for business, but this is absolutely absurd. So from let's say the ringmaster of the whole circus, we are all spectators of Mr. Disco Inferno and Mr. Ringmaster of the circus now. He says one word, one adjective, or one small sentence, and that monopolizes the news cycle 24/7, day after day after day. So this is the new reality. This is the new paradigm. Perhaps around 80 to 90% of what he says is absolute nonsense. But buried in this, I would say, supply chain of nonstop nonsense, you find a few nuggets. And if you follow the money, the nuggets are always there, expressed by Trump in plain language that a six-year-old can understand, of course. The usual pattern of reiterating what he wants to say over and over again. So it crushes your school because it's basically saying the same thing over and over and over again in a very simplified manner. And of course, for all of us, it's, I would say, absolutely pointless to try to find, to conceptualize what he's saying here. But his targets are very, very clear. First of all, it's a process of erasing everything in terms of foreign policy that the previous administration of the cadaver in the White House and the Secretary of Genocide, little Tony Blinken, everything that they did and everything that they were selling every day across the collective West. Very important, because the Global South and the global majority, they stopped buying what the Democrats were selling a long time ago. But the so-called collective West were still totally, you know, follow the leader mode, right? What's happening now is fascinating, Nima and our audience. The collective West doesn't exist anymore. The collective West is now dead. The ringmaster buried the collective West. Now there's only one West that matters, the empire. And now there's no more rules-based international order, which was propagated by the dead collective West until, of course, January. Now is the no rules-based international disorder. And obviously, Trump is a master of instilling disorder and spreading chaos. Sometimes he doesn't even have a further agenda. It's just for, it's just the way he operates as, of course, a master of spectacle. He's never thinking about usually he's never thinking about the next plot twists. There's a lot of improvisation, of course, but some of the ideas, at least in his mind, are very, very clear. So first of all, we're not going to lose money anymore in this absolutely ridiculous enterprise, which I, Trump, didn't start. The Democrats started. This is factually correct because the war, for many reasons, of course, but if we go back to Maidan, this was an Obama Democrats operation through and through. So yes, the Democrats started 2014 Maidan, and obviously when the special military operation was launched by Russia, because there was no other way for Putin to deal with the imminent blitzkrieg avalanche against Donbass, the Democrats were in power. We should not forget that when Trump is in power, he was, you know, slapping sanctions against Russia as well, and in his own Trumpian way, also demonizing Russia, and never addressing the root causes of the war in Ukraine. So now, consider that he doesn't have much time. This is very, very important. And this is something you have to go back. We have to go back to it over and over again. His emphasis is not foreign policy; it's domestic policy, because he has a massive, I would say, a Sisyphus-style fight. You know, rolling the rock uphill against his internal domestic enemies, and they are still very powerful. So to concentrate on that, he has to solve some foreign policy problems, including the most obvious one, this war where the U.S. is basically sinking funds and weapons. Second, Trump looks at Europe and see a bunch of gigantic, massive, cosmic, intergalactic losers. He doesn't respect anybody in the European Union, period. And considering that the Brits are out of the EU, he has a little bit of respect for some sectors of the British ruling classes. That's a completely different story. And we're not talking about British state or British government. And Europeans, of course, they don't even qualify as chihuahuas. So step two of Trump's targeting. Okay, you want to continue this war because it's more than obvious that European Union, the European Commission, and this congregation of chihuahuas want to continue the war because they bet everything on it, and there's no plan B because there never was any plan B. All right, so pay up 5% of GDP, all of you, pay up on NATO, and buy our American weapons to continue your war. It's not going to be our American war anymore, which is very, very clever because he wins twice. The U.S. roughly, it's between 47 to 50% of NATO's budget comes from the U.S. Trump looks at the numbers and said, that's it. No way. Forget it. So now he's going to make the Europeans pay twice, 150% raise on their contributions to NATO, plus buying even more weapons from the American industrial military complex. So what happened this past week, including the, I would say, in terms of unscripted dementia, no screenwriter on the planet could ever imagine that this would happen. And in terms of diplomacy, this is already in the diplomacy books for the rest of the century and beyond, and inside the Oval Office on top of it. But this was a disaster waiting to happen. Don't forget that Zelensky all this time has been like a sort of spoiled brat of the collective West, the way he was treated by the whole thing, from Washington to Brussels and the capitals of the collective West. So comes a new ringmaster circus and said, look, this thing is over. This gig is over, man. Get real. And I'm telling you what you have to do. And whatever you say, shut up, because you don't have the cards. Literally. These words by Trump himself. So can you imagine in a in the mind of a very, very, okay, I'll try to be diplomatic, disturbed character like Zelensky. And on top of it, cocaine. Everybody who is familiar with cocaine knows the long-term effect of sniffing 2, 3, 4 grams a day, day after day, which is his case. Obviously, you know, your, can you imagine your ego trip and your fantasies of your hegemonic fantasies, as put it the way, they evaporate, they're punctured instantly. And when that happened inside the Oval Office, his reaction was totally predictable, completely predictable. He couldn't even imagine that he was inside the Oval Office in the White House and antagonizing and disrespecting at the same time the president and the vice president of the United States. People who are on coke, Nima, in our audience, they don't think along these lines. Their sensation of invulnerability is, you know, predominates over everything. So it's no wonder that later he was trying, oh shit, I fucked up. Oh yeah, you did, big time. And now, from the point of view of Trump, who takes all these things personally, not diplomatically, that's it. That's the end. So now we have a list of variables applied to what might happen to Zelensky. You can have the mafia treatment. They can whack him, snuff him out, put him in the trunk of a departing car, coup d'etat, you name it. But he's over. He's a dead man walking. And on that, that's very tricky because it aligns with what Putin has been saying from a legalistic point of view. We cannot have a conversation with Kiev because this president is illegitimate. We need a legitimate party to start discussing. And in his own ringmaster circus reality show way, Trump has arrived to the same conclusion. We have to get rid of this guy. The thing from now on is the number one question on all the questions from now on, how to get rid of this guy. So as we can all see, Nima, you and our audience, these past few days, frantic arrangements by the dead collective West, right? The Chihuahuas in Europe. Everybody, Macron, Starmer, etc., the toxic Medusa von der Lugen, who, by the way, this week, she's going to present her plans for an European army. So everybody, start laughing now, even before it happens, because you know when it happens, you're going to be roaring with laughter and rolling at the aisles with laughter. Because we know that an army, NATO, non-NATO, you know, Chihuahuas from Latvia, Lithuania, the Baltics, or without Poland, with German contributions or not, whatever that is, whatever that army is, and of course the mighty British army, who cannot save a wimpy burger corner shop in Hampstead. You know, can you imagine these guys fighting the fighting-proof Russian army? So they will surrender in, okay, between 5 to 10 minutes, because between 5 to 10 minutes is the time they're going to take to understand that if they keep going on, they'll be instantly transformed into charcoal grilled burgers or steak tartare or something similar. So this is a sub joke inside the biggest joke, which is the Europeans are trying to come up with a solution apart from Trump's solution for Ukraine. So, you know, this brief description that I gave all of you, you can see all the superimposed Kafkaesque, surrealist, and frankly demented elements in this whole farce, fantasy. It's an enormous farce. Now being played in public, it's like a reality show Dadaist piece, because most of it makes no sense whatsoever, in fact, with non sequiturs, you know, with dead ends, etc. But There's one thing that is clear, at least from the Trumpian point of view. They want to end this kabuki their way, which does not mean that they know how to end the war. Because from all this kabuki taking place basically in the dead collective West, the Russians outside from Moscow, they are looking at it with, I would say, a mix of disbelief and perplexity. And obviously, they cannot contain a little smirk as well. Even if we prayed for this, this would never happen the way it's happening, of course. But none of that means that there is a convergence of interest in how to end the war. First of all, because the Americas are not yet, they are not mentally prepared. And I'm talking about Team Trump 2.0, to understand what it takes to really end the war, because they will have to integrate the Russian point of view and the Russian analysis, which has been, you know, disseminated all over since June last year. Because they know that even if they don't know, instinctively they know that if they do that, this implicitly recognizes the massive strategic defeat, in this case, of the collective West, including the United States, and the United States in itself against Russia. They cannot admit that. So they're going to try to come up with some sort of a formulation where Trump finds a sort of way out of this whole mess, throws the whole burden from now on to Europe, whatever configuration it is, European Union, NATO, non-NATO, whatever, and they start doing something else. But the war will not end. That's the most important part. The Russians already said, look, Ukraine is a small microcosm of a big picture. And this is indivisibility of security, a new security arrangement, post-Soviet space, Eastern Europe, Western Europe, NATO, etc. Relations between US and Russia have to be reestablished, and at least they are already starting that. This is a true start already. But this is the first step, because when they establish a measure of trust on both sides, then we're going to start getting to the nitty-gritty, which is the real discussion. And then everything is at play, Nima. INF, all sorts of missiles, spheres of influence, a possible new Yalta, the meeting face-to-face between Putin and Trump, etc. We are still very far away from all that. So for the moment we are, I would say, this is the starter at the moment, is this absolutely crazy circus that's been rolling all since last week. So we are on stage one. Get ready when we get to stage 7 or 8. You know, then things are going to be really serious.
The British media was reporting on the meeting between Zelensky and Stormer, which has happened after the meeting with Donald Trump, in which Zelensky said that the reaching a deal with the United States is far, far away. And Donald Trump was so just retweeting, just posting what Zelensky said and saying, this is ridiculous. This is not the way that it works. And he was just attacking Zelensky. Today, we've learned that Yermak, and I don't know how we can call him, he's the right hand of Zelensky, he's the most powerful figure in Ukraine after Zelensky, if Zelensky is the most.
I know. Let's call him the neo-Nazi Richelieu, for all of you familiar with French history.
Yeah. And he said that they're ready 100% to reach a deal with the United States. Here comes the role of the British government, Stormer, and the way they're trying to communicate with Ukrainians, with Zelensky, and bring them to the table. It seems that they did everything to facilitate the deal between the United States and Ukraine. You've mentioned about the British elites who are connected, who are respected by neocons in the United States. I want to know more about that. What do we know about these people? Are these people are connected? Are the same as we call in the United States neocons? Do they are they seeking the same sort of policies? Are they cooperating with the United States to benefit the British government, the British, the United Kingdom? How? What do we know about that?
Well, we have to make a distinction. Let's say probably three different vectors. Old money in the UK, which is a few families, most of them with connections with the Windsors. Well, they have interest, global interests, although they are not globalists per se. The MI6, which is an institution in itself. The MI6 basically is British intel, classic British intel, since they perfected at the, let's say, by the time of the new great game in the 19th century, before, of course, but they reached their apex between the new great game and the First World War, and then between both wars, because they wanted to get the maximum for the empire, all that. In the end, of course, the whole thing collapsed. But there are some very well-prepared people, and they know about intel, gathering intel, collecting intel, disseminating intel, and twisting intel, that the Americans, compared to them, are chihuahuas. No question about that. So they are admired across the Beltway, right? And the third factor is, of course, these ultra-mediocre political elites, which in the case of Britain these past few years, it's they are in a class by themselves. You know, we tend to think that the whole script, this has been a long-running, non-stop Monty Python sketch with abysses of tragedy and, in many cases, tragicomical effects, in fact. This is the current prime minister, Jesus. This guy is not, he cannot run a boarding school. Can you imagine a country as complex as the UK? Anyway, so these three are, you know, they are, let's say there is a, they are intertwined to a certain extent, but they have their own different agendas. The case of MI6 in terms of Ukraine is very, very peculiar because their man, until a while ago, was Zelensky, not anymore. They are already grooming their new man, Zaluzhny. Zaluzhny as Ukrainian ambassador in London, that's only for idiots to believe. He's being groomed by MI6 to be the next ruler and following a British agenda. Not an American agenda. The Americans, they still don't know what the Brits are, the way the Brits are conforming Zaluzhny's mind. This is a very sophisticated operation. So the Brits already have their next man. So the thing is, they need to convince the Americans that this is the right man for everyone. If the Americans start digging deeper, they won't like what they see. Subtext to all this is there is no, once again, very important, there is no definitive evidence, but all signs point to a deal already signed by Zelensky and Starmer. The famous 100-year deal, where basically Zelensky was selling Ukraine to the Brits, including the famous rare, the non-existent rare earth wells, right? They have some metals west of the Dnieper. They have some metals, maybe very small rare earth deposits. Everybody who did their homework knows that the bulk of the rare metals and rare earths are east of the Dnieper and now belong to Russia. They are in Novorossiya. Everybody knows that. So what did they sign exactly? And how could the head of a British government sign a deal like this with an illegitimate president? totally illegal. Everything around this deal is illegal, right? Okay, they'll have a battery of British lawyers to make it legal later on, but essentially this is illegal. So now we have a direct clash between what the Brits want out of Ukraine, what the Europeans want out of Ukraine, which for the moment is less than zero and will continue to be less than zero, because this deal was the Brits and Zelensky. And what Trump 2.0 wants in terms of clinching this possible rare metals, rare earth deal, which was scotched at last minute because of the drama at the Oval Office. So we already see, you know, the famous special relationship, they are diverging completely. They have two completely different visions of what can we extract from this black void called Ukraine. And what Ukraine will survive. We still don't know what Ukraine will survive at the end, because it will depend on how far the Russians want to go. It's going to be probably a rump Ukraine, which could be as contained and small as the Ukraine of 1654. Or it could have maybe a little more territory to the west that is not going to be gobbled up by Poland, Hungary, and Romania. Nobody knows anything about this. Nobody knows, right? But the Brits, in terms of, they do their intel homework better than anybody else, literally. So we have to respect them for that. So they have clinched the so-called very, very shady deal. And obviously the Americans, they want to clinch their own deal because after all, they are the superpower. They are still the empire. And obviously facing the Brits, they will slap the Brits and said, our deal works, not yours. Yours is fiction. We are the empire, what we say, rule. This is what empires do. And obviously the Brits are not even a possession of the empire. The Brits are an attachment to the empire. What's important, of course, is the geoeconomic, the way they are geoeconomically intertwined, and the way, of course, Wall Street, City of London, money from the global north and the global south that, you know, circulates in London, all that, very, very important, of course. But in terms of who rules, everybody knows who rules. And now is the circus ringmaster. So there are a lot of contradictions in this whole story. What the Brits want is one thing. What the Europeans want with their army of chihuahuas is another thing. And what Trump 2.0 is the overarching thing. And they want to get what they want as soon as possible. Even if they don't solve the war, which the way we see it for the moment is practically unsolvable, because what the Americans would like to get out of this is, from the Russian point of view, is absolute anathema. And we don't see Putin selling out on Ukraine, because Russian public opinion will be extremely harsh if he makes too many concessions. From what we hear so far from people around Putin, Security Council, you know, Minister of Foreign Relations, etc., there will be no concessions. If they don't find a way that is acceptable in on the table, this special military operation will keep going on. So this brings us to the possibility that the timeline that everybody had in mind until, let's say, a week or 10 days ago, that the war stops in 2025, not anymore. This war may well go to all the way to 2026.